everyone, and welcome to another episode of Convos and Cocktails. I'm your host, Lesego Tlhabi, and this is the show where we chat, we drink, we learn, sometimes we laugh. So I hope it's going to be another good one today. We have an incredible guest. She is the co-founder and CEO of Wuholt. There's a very long bio where Antumato, or Gloria Serobe, for the purposes of the interview, I'm going to call her Antumato just so you know, comes from. But I think you should Google that, because we're not here to do like the business chat. We are here to talk about your book, and we're here to talk about mothers-in-law, daughter-in-law dynamic. It's a very interesting conversation because we've had this conversation before. I did open my viewers up to ask questions, and a lot of them, it's like toxic mother-in-law stuff. So I think it's going to be very interesting because I know that you have some sage wisdom and advice, even if I don't agree with it all, but that's why you're here. So before we begin, what is this cocktail of choice, or why did you choose a mojito?
It has an illusion of health. There are herbs in it, and most cocktails don't.
Okay.
So whether it has alcohol in it, I hope mine has alcohol.
It does. This is the show where we drink.
Yeah, I'll be very angry if it isn't. because it has an illusion of health.
Okay.
And obviously, on the taste, it's good.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So, cheers. Thank you very much for making time to come.
Cheers. Thank you.
My very lovely assistant Dido added sugar on the rim. I hope it's trying to make things festive.
That's fine.
Okay, so we got your book. Now we want to talk about the dynamic of mothers-in-law. And also, I don't have a copy here, which is very unprofessional, and I apologize. But I wanted to speak to you about the dynamic of mother-in-law, because out of all the things that I read in your book, it is about your mother-in-law. But there was a section where you obviously answered questions about, it's a nice thing I'm going to say, where you answered, I don't know whose questions those were, readers' questions about mothers-in-law. And so I decided to kind of bring you in as the sage mother-in-law, because I think that you've written some interesting things. But before we get into the questions from the viewers, why did you decide to write an ode to your own mother-in-law?
I did it for two reasons, maybe three reasons. The first one is that 9 August 2013, it will be 10 years since she passed on, 9 August 2013, which is a funny date, to be honest, for somebody to pass on in the woman's day. But that's what happened. And so the main thing for this book was that it had to be launched on that 10th anniversary.
Yeah.
And so we met the deadlines. It was launched on the 8th of August, 2013. So that's one. The second reason I wrote the book was that I do think that the story around mothers-in-laws and daughters-in-laws is a horrible one.
It is.
And the good ones are not showing up. And I know a lot of stories of beautiful mothers-in-laws and daughters-in-laws that Sekgo includes your mother and Uma Gauta. Awesome relationship.
Yeah.
And so we don't write about those stories. And I thought that, let me do it.
Yeah.
Because what is sitting in now in the writing is the bad ones. So you've got mothers-in-law, don't know what else. And I just thought, let me write this one, and it will trigger the positive ones first to actually confirm that. It will also bring a question to the ones where the relationship is horrible and look at that and reflect on it, introspect.
So is this for you from the mother-in-law side or the daughter-in-law? Like who
both,
needs to?
Both, okay. Both. Because I have been a mother-in-law in my mother-in-law's life. I am also a mother-in-law in my son's life. So it is, I have balanced this book in terms of what each of one of us are supposed to do to make this work.
Yeah.
So I know that there's a suspicion that because I had an awesome relationship with my mother-in-law, that I am blindsided to what the mothers-in-laws are supposed to do to make things work. But I do have a bias, of course, in terms of what daughters-in-laws maybe need to do, because they're the ones who are joining new families.
Yeah.
And everything that comes with that to do something.
Okay, amazing. So let's talk about you joining this family. I know the story, but for those who don't know the story of how you met your husband and your mother-in-law, but first we'll start with Uncle Gawa. How exactly did you meet, and when did you decide, okay, we're getting married, this is it?
I decided to get married to him when he took me to Chicken Licking.
Love that. It's a very good...
Chicken Licking, yeah. At Uncle Charlie's. There was a Chicken Licking at Uncle Charlie's. It's not a highway, so you guys won't know where that Chicken Licking was. But Chicken Licking is Chicken Licking, right?
Yeah. I mean, Chicken Licking now is more a hangover thing for us than it is the first date.
Today, you guys, you will not cope with a guy who takes you to Chicken Licking. You will freak out. And he did, and we had chicken wings or whatever it was. And that was his budget. Mm-hmm. And I understood it.
Yeah.
He was a lecturer. Mm-hmm. He was new. So that was his budget.
Yeah.
Between him buying a car and taking this girl out, there wasn't much of a budget to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chicken Licking was like, wow. Yeah. Oh, no. Not if he did, I'll kill him. But
maybe he was also trying to test you just to see if you are.
No, he wasn't. That was as far as he could go.
Okay.
That's all he had. So, yes, in the 6 months we dated.
Okay. But also, do you hear that, guys? It's six months and then he proposed. He knew what he wanted.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's not 5 years, not exactly. 10 years now. Same, right? Because the disasters come, whether it's 10 years or 15 or 1 month or 3 months.
Yeah,
so for me, we dated for 6 months. And we thought that, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I met him.
That's incredible. So now, when you're dating, is this when you met Masrobe, or is this something that happened after you decided to get married?
Masrobe was quite conversed. The whole thing of meeting its girlfriends was not quite in her plate. But once we talk marriage and lobola and things, it starts to look like that.
Yeah.
So I met her right in the middle of that, of the lobola negotiations and now the seriousness of getting married. That's when I met him, met her. But practical, how I met her is very interesting.
Yes, I love interesting.
Should I say it?
You should, as I take a sip.
No, let me take a sip or so.
That's what the drinks are here for.
So the drinks are allowed,
The drinks are allowed. We drink the whole show.
Sorry.
Let me know if you want to top up. We've got a bar lady.
You have.
We do.
Don't offer me that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we do. It's also the evening now. Like, we can go and have a good time. Anyway.
Okay. So, but in the once the agreement about getting married was done, so the issue was now, let's start getting prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was buying a wedding dress. It turns out, as a family, they pay for the wedding dress.
Oh, very.
It's
very
a
nice
tradition I didn't know, but in their tradition.
And it's mostly sons, so Masrobe had to buy quite a few wedding dresses.
Oh, no, he's got, lots of, those sons were costly now. And you can shop for the wedding dress wherever you want to shop. Theirs is to settle the bill.
Okay.
Not so much about choosing it for you, but they settle the bill. In my case, though, I didn't know Johannesburg. And so my husband enlisted her to help me shop for my wedding dress. Mm-hmm. Which is a bit upside down, right?
It is. It's very rare. I don't know that one.
So I had to meet her in Johannesburg, and the store at the time was Shelley's Boutique, which was supposed to be top-end store, and they also had wedding dresses. So we went there. She came with her friend who was a relative, Auntie Rachad. And it turns out they have been there before.
Mm.
So my shopping was not complicated because they had been there before And they told the store that I'm size 32, 34. And so the store had hauled out a whole rail of 32s and 34s. And it was easy for me to choose from that. And I got this gorgeous, gorgeous dress, which I fitted. I went to the fitting room. I came out. And they were waiting out there. Looked so nice. And they were ululating. Remember, this Shelley's boutique is not a private boutique.
Yeah.
There are other shoppers.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I came out, ululating, so the other shoppers also were like part of the move now.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay, so the dress is now bought. And it's a dress, if you understand us, then it's a dress with a hat and a veil, and the shoes look like the dress. So all of that system. So she pays for that, and then she also offers to take it home for safekeeping, because it was only in September, October,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to marry in January.
Okay.
So this was quite convenient for me,
mm-hmm.
that she takes it for safekeeping. Except the night before the wedding, that's when the dress came to, I come from Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
The dress came, and out of excitement, I opened the dress. And then when I open the dress, it's the same dress. It's a little different.
It's been altered now behind your back.
When they got home with that dress, they felt that the dress is beautiful, but it lacks the bling that they like.
Mm-hmm.
Like the shiny stuff, and whether the shoes or the head or the dress itself. And then they decided, they have a friend in Mufulo in Soweto who knows how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so without talking to me, they took the dress and the shoes and they had to help to throw in this, put in these blinky things.
Yeah.
And so the dress was different because it had now things that I don't know.
He didn't approve.
And so that could be a deal breaker for you guys, young guys.
It would stress me out a lot, I won't lie.
It would stress you a lot because the dress is everything,
yeah.
Right? It's just that, good or bad, I was preoccupied with one thing and one thing only.
Which one?
I so wanted to marry my husband.
Oh.
And the main thing was that you got his ID,
mm-hmm.
can he sign, can you get married?
Yeah.
And therefore, the dress was
the least of your worries.
Secondary. But by the way, I also find it more beautiful with these blingy things,
mm-hmm.
in spite of the fact that I was not consulted.
Yeah.
So there was no issue for me.
Mm. Okay, well, that's, I mean, it's a great story. And like you said, a lot of people would be, you know, maybe more negatively affected.
It'll be freak out.
It'd freak out, yeah. Actually, let's use that term because, yeah, it would be definitely be, for me, a personal freak out. So even if, like you said, what was the reason you decided to give your mother-in-law the benefit of the doubt? And other than liking the dress itself, was this before you, I mean, because you had never established a relationship before. You're saying this is like one of your first meetings. So what was the reason you decided to just give her the benefit of the doubt? And I guess what advice would you give to people who kind of are in situations where mothers-in-law might overstep, even for good reason?
The reason I gave that benefit of it is many things, but I could see my own mother doing that.
Mm.
I could visualize my own mother in Cape Town doing exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes where we create this, get triggered in this way,
mm.
is that sometimes if you close your eyes and you are listening to this, what you see as overbearing and all of that, if you close your eyes, you'll see your own mother doing it. Penny?
Not you calling out my mom. I mean, yeah, there's
can
some...
You,
I can...
Can you say an element of
I can see her doing my dress over behind my back.
I'm telling you.
Also, I would probably like it, Shane, because...
Yeah, and you love it because it comes from a heart full of love.
Yeah.
and you like submit her maybe for a second, and you actually say, he comes from a heart full of love. I actually thought so. There was nothing in it which was trying to defy me or whatever. It was the old-fashioned kind of way of showing love.
Yeah.
And I could see my mother doing that. And that's the reason I, as I'm saying though, my main objective was until this deal is done of signing, everything else is augmenting that.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I didn't have. And we continue talking about this dress with her. She giggles when she talks about it, that she felt she'd done a wonderful job. And I thought she did. No, there was nothing that could unsettle me with that.
Okay, so I'm going to speak about, you know, toxic mother's law and patriarchy and things like that, because I do think that those are important conversations. But what I'm learning from your book was actually in that incident, in terms of giving people, like I said, the benefit of the doubt and trying to see the positive, because I know a lot of people probably have those stories as to why they don't get along with their mothers-in-law. But just in general, how important do you think it is for the daughters-in-law to kind of step up and be the mature one or try and fix things with their mothers-in-law?
In my mind, Sekgo, is that I was 28, which is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
But young I was, in the sense of that I came straight from university, I'm getting married, I've never been married before, so I don't know much about this whole thing of being married, right? And my own mother, there's a chapter in the book where my mother surreptitiously was speaking to my mother-in-law about, she was worried about something. My mother was worried about something, that being married, there's an expectation of your thing and the domestic thing about cooking and washing and cleaning houses. My mother was worried about that. That
this is not something that was your strength.
Not something. Not because I've been everywhere except home.
Yeah.
So a lot of things, truly speaking, I don't know.
Mm.
And not because I didn't want to be part of. So my mother has this funny conversation now with my mother-in-law that says, of all my 10 children, and we're 10 at home, she says, of all my 10 children, this is the one I lost at 11 years old, because she went to boarding school, and she went to that boarding school, and then she went to that university, and then she's now back here, she's a wife. I never had the option to groom her in whatever. And my mother-in-law, my mother was apologizing to my mother about, please forgive her.
For not knowing how to do
all these things. And I heard that from my husband, because he was listening to this conversation and had this cynical thing about, oh, so this mother now comes all the way to from Cape Town to apologize, but I've now signed off my life to this thing.
It's too late.
It also turned out that my mother-in-law had already observed that. That, oh my God, I'm ingathi ayisebenzi. But one of the accusations with the mothers-in-laws is that they use that to judge you and do all manner of things horrible around you. But my mother-in-law observed that, and she thought, let me rearrange and take her energy to somewhere else while I'm teaching her. But let me use her. She does have the energy.
Yeah.
Poor thing, she doesn't have this one. And so she directed me to all her community work and so on. And I was eager and available and so on. And so what I'm saying is that It's my weakness in the domestic side was used constructively
mm-hmm.
on the community work side.
Yeah.
And where we miss it, I think as the mothers-in-laws, and is when you don't rearrange this direction.
Yeah.
Because it's not all of us who are good at ABC.
Mm-hmm.
You are probably good at something else. She looked at what I'm possibly good at,
mm-hmm.
and she directed my energy there.
So how do you feel, I mean, about maybe giving people advice to say, because I do think that you had a very, very blessed mother-in-law, clearly, who had worked on her own triggers and traumas, and because that's quite a mature take. But I do know that there are a lot of mothers-in-law who would judge that, who would then say, you're less of a wife, or, you know, you're not good enough for my son. He needs to be with Mang Mang, who used to cook, who used to.
Yes.
So how do you actually think that a daughter-in-law should go about maybe expressing that they're not good at all the things that this mother-in-law yeah. wants, but that they're willing and open to redirect their energy? Because, yeah, not a lot of mothers-in-law are patient enough, are kind enough to see that and then kind of give the energy somewhere else.
It comes from both sides, because you are small, you are young, and you don't have the intellectual capability to navigate this cruelty, let's call it the cruelty of the mother-in-law. Because in the end, at the beginning, it's very important that your mother-in-law does give you the support.
Yeah.
You are coming to a system you do not know.
Mm.
You've never been married before. This is your first marriage.
Mm.
You love your husband dearly. You don't know much about his family. You're trying to learn about his family.
Yeah.
And so I think that why I'm seeing the mothers-in-laws are supposed to be mentors and leaders and all of that, it is because they've been where you are before.
Mm.
So we were 28, which means my husband, my mother-in-law has been here more than 40 years. She knows how this family works.
Mm-hmm.
She knows the ins and outs. And so, like going to a job, she can play this mentorship role
mm-hmm.
of holding your hand and giving you the ropes in terms of how, I'm talking now traditions, the value systems
yeah.
and all of that kind of thing. But typically what happens is that you get gauged now on how you can wash these 100 plates or cooking for 100 people. This is not what marriage is about.
Mm.
And so somewhere it gets wrong at that point.
Yeah.
And it can go left or right or south or north and for good.
Yeah.
So I think that if I were to talk to you guys, young wives.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm just putting it in the universe.
You guys.
Pray for us. Wives, yeah.
Have the scope for this.
Mm-hmm.
Have the capacity to understand the madness that comes with. That is not why you're here.
Yeah.
You are here because you love this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm only appeal to you guys is that you are expected to build these families,
mm-hmm.
build these homes. There's always a question as to why me?
Yeah.
And why am I being given this burden of building these homes? But Penny has a Lesego and Fense who will always be a Tlabi.
Mm-hmm.
And in the chaos, you are the ones who belong to this system. I can always pull back, but you can't. And so you are doing it, one, to make a good platform for your children. They must link and relate to this family system.
Mm.
They are too small, and they can only do this through you, because they are always hanging on to your dress.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes embracing this thing, which they don't have the option, to opt out of it. You've got to give them a soft landing platform to actually understand it. If as a mother you do not understand it, mm-hmm. you pass it to your children. Truth of the matter is that with time, you want to be the Sikhotlabi. You want to be Fense Tlabi. That's who you are. Mm-hmm. And help them to understand that system of being a Tlabi with everything that comes with it. Mm-hmm. And you being the mother, being the wife, you are that face that looking at, they're 8, they're 9, they're 10 years old, and so on. But if you are disparaging of it,
yeah,
so do they. And they're in the quagmire now.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, it is that you coming into a system, you have your own views about it, and do what you can to relate to it and learn as much about it.
And then break it down.
You will have an opportunity to value add.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that the things you want to amend
yeah.
in this family system is not that big, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But can you take a back seat and learn and understand it first before you break it down?
I mean, that's very, very difficult. But also coming from a place where maybe going into the family is nice, the family's understanding. There are also families, and I've asked you this on Thursday when we spoke, but just to go over it again, because obviously they weren't there. I feel like a lot of the time mothers-in-law, sisters-in-law uphold the patriarchy, uphold things under the guise of tradition, make wives, like you said, wake up at 5 o'clock, have to prove themselves through domestic chores, just because either they had to do it or because of their own unhealed traumas and triggers that want to punish this person who's maybe taking away their son, taking away their breadwinner, taking away their attention. So they're not always mothers-in-law who, like I said, have best interests at heart. There are some mothers-in-law who are toxic, who are patriarchal, who uphold patriarchy, misogyny. So how does someone go into a family and kind of deal with that behavior? Or, you know, how do you learn how to deal with misogyny and patriarchy first, rather than kind of pushing back or having your husband push back for you?
All of what you've described is damaged people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is always going to be that I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a therapist, mm-hmm. I'm not, but I just happened to get married into a damaged family.
Yeah.
And they do all these things that you are talking about. Some are, things are solvable and others are not.
Mm.
So let me give an example. While I was in trouble with being useful in the kitchen, you will be shocked with how useful I am today.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because our lives have thrown things at us that makes it much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling Penny about these AMC ports. They're as big as the black ports.
Yeah.
Where they are on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But these AMC ports, same size. But they use the, you plug them on the wall.
Okay.
You can cook the same size of food
mm-hmm.
With these AMC pots. I hope AMC doesn't see this as a as an advert. I don't know how you're going to do that.
They must,
they must pay you for this. Yeah, so you can plug them on the wall, very big as the black pots.
Mm-hmm.
So the example I'm giving is that black pots, you would have to be there on the fire at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
If you're preparing for lunch. The AM supports, you plug them on the wall, you go back to sleep, and they cook so nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 o'clock, this food is actually very ready to be eaten. All I'm trying to say here is that our lives are better. There's nothing traditional about sitting in that fire with the black cords and cooking there the whole night. Mm-hmm. There was nothing traditional about it. You are not breaking no rules if you don't do that.
Yeah.
Simply because you've got this massive size.
Or a caterer.
Or a caterer and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at these things, the struggle and the suffering, it had very little to do with the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
It had everything to do with the convenience. That is actually the I'm saying to you, Les Kaho, is that you can be a good Makoti without being in that fire outside
yeah.
with the block pots.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the conversation I want to have with the young wives, that you can enhance these traditions
mm-hmm.
without changing the bigger thing. The reason you were in the fireplace mm-hmm. with the black pots is that 12 o'clock, you must now have lunch. Okay, if it's 12 o'clock, you can plug on your pots at 5 o'clock. The food will be ready by 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in you. Your meat is ready, your tini is ready, your rice is ready, your vegetables is ready. It has nothing to do with that fire outside.
Mm-hmm.
That is not tradition.
Some of us don't even want the AMC pot struggle. Even this generation needs like a microwave now or whatever's next.
No, but microwave, there's no big microwave.
Yeah.
But this thing is a plugging on the wall, you go and sleep again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just cooks slowly and all of that kind of thing. Maybe what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that the sitting on the fire nothing to do with the traditions or the family.
Yeah.
So when you move from that to putting things in your oven, grilling things so that by the time lunchtime comes, everything is ready.
Mm.
It has nothing to do with the tradition. It had everything to do with what was available that time.
Yeah.
That's one part. Where I do not agree with you guys mm-hmm. is that if it says burial is at 12 midday,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the lunch is at 1. You can't rearrange that and say, I'm so sorry, I'm tired. can we really push it to 5 p.m.?
Mm.
There is a reason. You agree with it or you don't agree with it, but there's a reason they say an adult in this family gets buried at 12.
Mm-hmm.
Don't change that. That's not your call now.
Mm.
It's nothing to do with you. Yours is to fit the eating into this tradition.
I mean, for me, I think it's just the case of, like I said, if mothers-in-law can also deal with not always going to be me who wants to cook or can cook or does cook, but if there needs to be food ready, that will be arranged somehow. Might not be me to prove the pots, the AMC, the black
yeah.
pot. Might be a caterer, might be else. It might be, you know, a number of things where you're just like, this is just not in my wheelhouse. I also coming into a situation like you, where I'm not really the most domestic or the most well balanced cook, but I know a friend of mine who said, you know what? Just arrange, bring the groceries if that's your contribution.
Do what you have to
do.
Do
what you can
yeah.
do. Remember, it all continues over on the socials at @Lesego_Tlhabi. Now let's get back into Convos and Cocktails. I have some questions from some viewers. But before I actually get there, I want to speak about your book a little bit more. Your mother-in-law had a great relationship with her mother-in-law. So I just want to speak a little bit about that. But also the question is, do you think that it's important for somebody to look at the relationship that their mother-in-law had with their mother-in-law in order to kind of gauge if there's going to be a toxic train or a healthy train? Because it feels like because Masarobe's mother-in-law was so good to her and they had such a good relationship, therefore she was a good mother-in-law to you, therefore you have been a good mother-in-law to your daughter-in-law. So do you think that that's kind of the energy that people need to look at? Or do you think it's not really related and it's just kind of luck of the draw whether your mother-in-law sucks or not?
She had a wonderful time with her mother. She was 21 years old when she got married. So she needed this support even more desperately. And so she gave of herself to us as the daughters-in-law, there's three of us, because he's got three boys. And the fourth boy died before she could get married. She threw everything at us to make it work. The reason she could do that is that herself, she was a career woman. She was a nurse. And you know, the nursing times are very hard. Yeah. Sometimes I work right through the night, sometimes the whole day. So, and then you are bringing up children, five children in total. She understood that hardship and so on. So, how she actually gave of herself to us. I do think that, yes, the mother-in-law was supportive, but she gave of herself to us because she knew exactly what it means to be a career woman and bringing up a young family and also being a respected makoti and all of that. That's what she did. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, it's a combination of all of that. And so the most important thing is that once she did, it was left to us to embrace that or not embrace that. But I know, and my co-sisters-in-laws, they can attest to this, that she threw everything for us, for our careers to work and at the same time to be good wives, mothers. And she filled the gap where, because bringing up young children and you're also running a career, it's not doable. You cannot balance this thing.
Yeah,
there's only so much hours in a day, and something is going to falter. And I just want to really emphasize on the young wives that don't burn yourself, don't break yourself. It's not doable.
Yeah,
don't be a powerful mother and a powerful career. Something is going to falter. But we have serious support systems from our families. And some of it, we walk away from it because we think that the only person who can help you bring up your own children is your biological mother. The thing is, this one has brought you up this gorgeous man. Somehow, all of a sudden today, you think that she's not good enough. Just get out of that. Because both mothers dote on their grandchildren.
Yeah.
And any opportunity to be with them, they will take that and grab it. So when you look at this thing about fetching them from school and helping them with their homework, and playing them go to their swimming lessons and ballet dances. Have you seen the grandmothers in that room? They are ridiculously happy. Even you as a ballet dancer, did my grandmother have to come here and scream like that? But she is besides herself because you are a reflection of what she would have been as she had the same opportunity. So these grandmothers are very keen to be a part of your upbringing. They're quite excited to have a replica of themselves. And we are depriving them, depending where you sit, and not giving them the opportunity to actually do this. So in my mind, I think that we're missing out on this. Because we've got this war zone that is so, it's a scam, really. There's no war.
I mean,
no,
I suppose
war.
For some people, they would ask, how am I supposed to allow or want this woman to look after this mother-in-law, this grandmother, to look after my kids if we don't even have a good relationship? Especially if it feels like it's coming from a disrespectful place rather than just, we're not understanding each other. If this mother-in-law is saying bad things about you, I mean, you wrote about this actually in your book, so... I just can't remember what the answer to the question was when someone said, you know, what do I do if my mother-in-law speaks badly about me or disses me or, you know, complains in front of my children.
I had an interesting, and I was happy I have this interesting call from Ululu. Ululu is the wife to Ayanda Nsaluba.
Mm-hmm.
She says to me that she's read the book, all of it.
Yeah.
It is completed. She cannot believe that all the horror stories that she hears
mm-hmm.
about mothers-in-laws are the stories she knows from her own mother.
Mm-hmm.
So she says her mother came to the house and she had gone to work. When she comes from work, the furniture is rearranged now. The sofa, instead of looking south, is looking left mm-hmm. and all of that. And she asked, they said, no, Gogo did change this. When she asked her mother, she says, that lounge didn't look right. So she took that lounge, the sofa there, and the other one sofa there, and all of that. And she says, it's her mother, her own mother. In your world, if this was a mother-in-law, you would have killed that husband. How dare she? So these mothers, I keep saying, close your eyes, see her. Whatever this insensitive comment is coming from your own, from your mother-in-law, see your mother in it. Pretty much same thing. When they say you're not bringing up children, well, your own mother says that.
Well, I hope she never does.
They do. Your own biological mother, they come from the same generation.
Mm-hmm.
They are overwhelmed with what we're doing with our children. We're not forcing you to eat at the same time. All of those things. And they comment on this thing. The truth of the matter is that both mothers do that.
Mm-hmm.
And once it is a mother-in-law, it carries a whole lot of feces now to the... And the husbands get overwhelmed by this because they are now being forced to choose between you and their mother,
mm-hmm.
which is very complicated. Other than to say that when you do force your husband to choose between you and his mother, you're going to lose that battle, Sikho. Don't even try it.
Mm.
Don't try it.
And I mean, I would hope I never have to. Because I just wouldn't want anyone to choose. I mean, if someone asked me to choose between my mom and them, they're going to lose.
But that's the point.
If the toxic thing happens, I hope people are just able to. So how would you then suggest a son-in-law or any in-law gets involved in the conversation just to be like, okay, I'm not choosing between you and my mom, but how do I then go to my mom and say, look, this is not right, or this is, we need to fix this. You know, you can't say this to her. You can't do this.
Your husband is lichsicho.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the husband and their mothers-in-laws.
Mm-hmm.
They have a wonderful time. Their mothers-in-laws love them to like death. Umkhwenyan, ukuvengela umkhwenyane.
Yeah.
And your sisters, ufense will be falling all over your husband and whatever. Okay. But you have a brother, brings a wife in. It's a different scenario. Between you and Fence and your mother, you are harassing the poor thing. She's also 23 years old. And you are giving her hell. And I think that we have to be careful about this because this is the wife your brother has chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think there are weaknesses in her, aren't you supposed to just help with those weaknesses?
Exactly.
But most important, I'm also talking to the daughters-in-laws now. Shouldn't you just sit back? Before you judge this family, can you understand it a little bit? But before you have your own views and all of that. Of course you can, after all of that exercise.
Yeah.
And find that this family I should not have been. Yeah, do the right thing. But most of the times you don't even make this time to understand what's going on here. because this is a family system with many traditions over many years. And you are expecting your husband, who's 21, 23 years old, to understand these traditions. Himself, he doesn't.
Oh, this is personally also.
You were at university together, and he also is learning with you all the way. Mm-hmm. And so as these hiccups come, you keep going back to him and expect him to fight your battles. He doesn't know what battles he's fighting. All he sees now is that my wife is this side, my mother is this side. And I'm in such a turmoil. I have to make the choices. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a bit of, it might sound that I'm putting too much burden on the sons to understand what's going on. I am probably also saying, can you just sit back and understand this family first? Because you have come into this system. That's what marriage unfortunately does. It brings you into an existing system. Whatever the reason is that your children are never going to be clubby. Mm-hmm. Your children are always going to be the home. And your children must be in that home. You are clubby because you are clubby children.
Yeah.
And your children, you can't say, no, my mom, oh, my mom. Your children belong to that system. And yours is to make it as happy as yours was made, isn't it?
I mean, probably because we had a great grandmother, but some people don't. Some people really just don't. I've seen chaotic stories, but make with things with sure. Tradition, with generations, things like that, because I do think that sometimes, like I said earlier in the conversation, people hide behind the word tradition when they actually just imposing toxic kind of rules on a wife or a mother. And I do also think if the generations who are younger don't fight back in some way, because just because something is old or has been there for a long time doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy or it's right. So like you said before, yes, learn the system before you break it down, I guess.
Yeah.
But how do you also, do you have any advice maybe for a wife who has come in, has learned, has been patient, but still sees something, a rule, a way of doing things, a tradition as toxic or as patriarchal or just something that it shouldn't really be there. How do you, I suppose, give any advice if you have for someone who sees something that is called tradition but is actually just a toxic practice?
It's going to be a number of exits, right? And one of those is that is it harmful to you?
Mm-hmm.
If it is harmful, run as far as possible. If it is a diversion from what you know,
mm-hmm.
but it is not harmful to your system,
mm-hmm.
and your own children have got to be part of this, think about them
mm-hmm.
and do the right thing. If it is whatever it is, and now that you know and you understand and you have a relationship of trust with the family, enhance it, make it better, and whatever. I don't want to emphasize on these blackboards and the whatever, same, right? The only requirement there was that the food must be ready at 1 because you now bury it at 12. Do you want to change the burial to 4 p.m.? It makes no, it's nothing to you, to your life. So they can go ahead and continue with that 12 o'clock burial. And therefore, because they finish and lunch is at 1, make that happen because you can. Whether it's your caterers, it's your boards, and whatever.
Yeah.
But do you want to rearrange the whole thing about burying 12 o'clock? What are you rearranging it to? Leave it be. Because you don't know what they are dressing, right? Does it harm you
mm-hmm.
that they bury at 12? It doesn't. So why are you having this big angst about it?
Yeah.
rather than to just you fitting into that and making it work. So in my head is that if it doesn't harm anything where you are, mm-hmm. it's just respect it.
Yeah. But then if it does, I mean, if it is the harmful one?
Oh, no. If it is the harmful one, like all manner of things that we've seen, you should not have been in this family in the first place.
Okay.
That is a point. And at that point, run as far as you can. Because you it's married a change. Guy you don't know, mm-hmm. right? If they say, being ridiculous now, if they say, Sikho, you must eat the whole goat. Oh, gosh. I mean, that's quite serious mm-hmm. now. You can't get out of that.
Yeah.
Do the right thing. But because you really got into, you can tell your husband that, unfortunately, we didn't discuss this part of it. But now, this is untenable. Mm. Somebody asked me about, what if your value systems don't fit this family?
Yeah.
I said, some of the things that happen with people convert to being Muslims because they're getting married too. Once you convert to Muslims, then you do the Muslim things. You abandon your Methodist ways or your Baptist ways or your Presbyterian ways, right? Mm. Those are straightforward. But what if there was no such a conversion thing required, but you find yourself with this tradition that is so ridiculously against everything you know? And there's a conversation to be had there with your husband and your mother-in-law to say, I'm trying my best, but do you want me to eat a raw foot of an elephant? Oh, no, I can't. But have a conversation that says that. And what if your mother-in-law says, I understand. Mm-hmm. You come from where you come from, and I will speak for you. You do not have to do ABC. What if she says that? Do you still have to run? No, you don't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose these are very important conversations to also have before you get married. To learn and understand so you can see if you're willing or not.
Yeah. But those conversations don't happen before you marry. Mm-hmm. You know why they don't happen before you get married? Your boyfriend doesn't know them either.
This is true.
So you might bump into these things while you're already right inside. Mm. He himself is seeing for the first time. It might be that he himself is just as disgusted. And so you're fiddling with this thing. You're kind of like having all manner of things. But for me, the most important is that have open conversations about all of these things, as opposed to, I'm out of here. You take your Louis Vuitton bag and your...
I love that I have a Louis Vuitton bag in this situation.
And your, what is the the shoes with the red thing at the bottom?
Christian
Louis Vuitton. I'm out of here. It's not my deal. The poor thing also doesn't know this deal. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a lot of conversation about what's happening. Because he himself doesn't know. And give him some slack. Mm-hmm. And have that kind of proper conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I learned from your book, which from before, I would have definitely been the fighter in all the scenarios you brought up. So it was very interesting to take a little bit of introspection and learn about giving people grace, learn about kind of treating people first with love, understanding where they come from, or even if you don't understand where they come from, just allowing there to be a different truth, a different version of the truth. Okay, so I do have two or three questions from viewers, let's say. So these ones I would call toxic mother-in-law behaviors because, not a lot of, you know. So this one is there are some nice ones. Okay, there are some nice ones. But it says, my ex-mother-in-law behaved like she is the first wife and that I was the side chick. She was horrible. but I do want to fix the relationship because they have children. How do we go about that? Is it too late? How? Yeah. Actually, what do you do if you get to an ex-mother or to a mother-in-law situation? Because there are some of those who feel like their son's first wife, and then you are coming and ruining this beautiful relationship or home. How do you approach a situation like that?
And there are two children involved. Mm-hmm. So
actually, even if there weren't children involved, because you do sometimes find those mothers-in-law who just, they don't have time for you because it's like my love of my life. Maybe especially single moms have that energy.
Yes.
But yeah, just in general.
Yeah. I think the barometer is your husband. Mm-hmm. And to what extent is he troubled by this?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he must be troubled because you are unhappy and the mother-in-law is unhappy. And you cannot burden the young wife to be the only one who has to fix this. But we also come, Lesego, from a generation that says, you're a child, climb down.
Ah, that's the hardest. I don't have that generation in me.
When you're fighting with your mother, mm-hmm. and you're all screaming at each other, and at some point somebody must climb down. Mm-hmm. It's you. And so here is a horrible mother-in-law then who thinks is a first wife and all of that kind of thing. Of course, you look at your husband, you read his temperature, you do whatever. It might be that actually some of the things you are screaming at each other about are so neither here nor there. I told you about a number of stories in my marriage. Mm-hmm. Where my mother-in-law gave out all my clothes to an NGO. And it was a spot of bother.
Yeah.
Could have been. That says that she's a monster. She's a nasty. She knew what she's doing. The point of the matter is that she genuinely thinks that these were excess clothes. And in my life, these were my most prized clothes.
Yeah.
That's why they were sitting in her house. And for weddings, for special occasions. Mm. For her, she thought there was an excess clothes because they've been there for 5 months and nobody has touched this box.
Mm-hmm.
And she just dishes them out and so on. So some of the things we fight about, if you strip out the reality from the nastiness,
yeah.
There's a big part of it which is not a nasty streak.
Mm-hmm.
It so happens that it comes from her. But I'm also accepting that you can have the most horrible mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And so what do you do with that? Your husband must make the call.
Yeah.
Because she knows what's going on. But be quite open with him, and also whatever chance you have to make your mother-in-law to make her feel about what she's doing to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the horror questions is that they make all these horrible comments about you in front of your children.
Mm-hmm.
That's a no-no.
Yeah.
The children must not be dragged into it. But first prize is that spend as much time with your husband on this. He must know how you feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have the opportunity to make your mother-in-law know, and make her know that this is what it's doing to you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Okay. This one just says, I had an amazing mother-in-law from day one. She even came to help after I gave birth to our child. How do you manage your relationship with your mother-in-law that doesn't like your own mom? Mother-in-law treats me well, but constantly speaking ill of and showing my own mom her dislike. That's an interesting question.
Who is she? Oh, then that's not a nice mother-in-law then. She's a horrible one. Your mom.
Mm.
Oh, no. In all what I'm saying today, Your mom must never be sacrificed in this situation. You're trying to straddle both your husband's mother and your mom.
Yeah.
Your mom is the most important thing for you. And the reason I'm fighting the battle for the mothers-in-laws is because as the wives, we have decided to look at the husband's wives as horrible.
Mm-hmm.
If she's an awesome mother-in-law, very nice, maybe teach her to respect at most, if not love, teach her to respect your mother.
Mm-hmm.
It can be either or.
Yeah.
Because you come from here, your husband comes from there. Can be either or.
Okay, so this one says, how do you deal with a weak husband who is controlled by his mother and family? Yeah. Her calling her husband weak, but how do you deal with a weak husband who is controlled by his mother and his family?
I wish I knew what that control means. They
Same. But I suppose maybe the
pushing
decisions
her
that
all over
he doesn't
the place.
Make decisions maybe unless he's consulting her and she has the last say. And
okay, you've got your house and nobody must control your house.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. If controlling your husband is in that house and all the things that happen there is in the traditions and stuff like that, yeah, it belongs back in your own house. Oh, no, nobody must come and control anyone in your house. With all the slack I have for mothers-in-laws, in your house, it is your house.
Mm-hmm.
That's your territory. And so the sisters-in-laws and your mothers-in-laws and whatever, I'm only looking for a respectful relationship with your mothers-in-laws and do the right thing. Maybe I am spoiled in this case because my mother-in-law never tried to do that.
Mm.
She didn't think it is in her space to do so. But as a big family system, it's a particular system.
Mm-hmm.
It has its own hierarchy. And the rules are there. That's a different.
Mm-hmm.
Do you slaughter a cow? Do you slaughter a goat? What do you do when the child is born? That's their system. And I'm saying that in your little family unit, that's the system you fit into. But back to your house, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
It's you and your husband, your children.
All right. Well, Antibato, we have come to the end of this hour. Thank you so much for giving some advice. I thought I was going to push back a lot more, but I really have sat with your book since we had the conversation on Thursday. And I just, like I said, I've learned a lot about giving people grace, about kind of not coming with your own, because just like mother-in-laws can have their toxic, side or their triggers and unhealed trauma, so too, obviously, can a daughter-in-law come in with their unhealed traumas, with their own triggers, and then everything they're looking at is from the lens of this unhealed trauma. So I have learned a lot about grace, and not just with the mother-in-law relationship, just in general, but I think because this one is such a difficult one. It's intimate, but it can also be extremely difficult. And it's written about not so well. So glad I'm learning this all before I get married. If I get married,
when you get there, you will. So why didn't you push back?
Because I learned. Sometimes I learn.
Mm.
Sometimes I learn. I do think that, like you said, there are moments where people need to then address things in the household. I also think, if you can and you're not married yet, learn as much as you can, make decisions from there as to whether or not you can put up with it. But I also do think on both sides that there's more unhealed traumas and you can't kind of enter everything with this energy because of whatever yours are.
Books and boots. Yeah.
And marriages are complicated because I'm not trying to be cooking all the time for anybody. But I genuinely have learned a lot. Okay.
And your views on the book? Let me hear about the views of the book.
I love the book. This is from the book. This is the advice. I mean, the stuff from the book that I got was all the stuff of just being a little bit more viewing all the things that happen, especially just starting with the stories you've told today from the wedding dress. Those would have probably triggered me.
Mm.
So just looking at them from a different viewpoint in the way you wrote about it and the way you felt about it has really changed my mind on a lot of things. I do still think, like I said, very toxic mother-in-laws, very toxic some families, patriarchal, things that will not, I can't stand for. But yeah, there's a lot. Like,
what do you think in the book I skipped?
You skipped.
What did I avoid in the book?
Well, I don't know what you avoided. I think the only thing with was because your relationship was so good that a lot of the answers come from a place of, like you said, I guess maybe a bit of a privilege in that you had the luck that your mother-in-law was just great. Some mothers-in-law don't care if you come in nice, if you try and cook, if you try and they still have their unhealed shit, for lack of a better word. So yeah, I think it was just from a written from a place of someone who just has a great mother-in-law, and
I guess
even is a great mother-in-law. But yeah, so thank you.
So
very
today
much.
You were unhinged. You were not contained.
No, I'm never contained. Girl.
Yeah, never contained. No. And I came here. I said, "Oh, Nisako is going to tell me to go to hell." I am. So,
I'm always willing to learn things when I really. I mean, I don't know this relationship. I've never had this relationship with anyone. I mean, I've had boyfriends and met moms, but never in the Makoti sense. So I was also willing to very much first listen. I asked the questions I wanted to ask. I asked about the patriarchy. I asked about the toxicity.
Yeah.
But I also learned.
So are you able to take a back seat and understand?
We'll see.
How that family looks like.
I mean, also, right now, the person I'm dating is French. So there's another system I'd have to learn anyway.
It's
I can't
a big
with,
system.
Like,
it's a very big system.
Fighting my South African.
It's, and that's a problem, though, Seho, is that when it is French or
just
we,
a different
we kind
culture.
Of like try to look as to how does that work.
Mm.
When it is a local and it's a vendor guy, or is a Pedi guy, or is a Zulu guy,
we have less grace.
We struggle. We have less grace for this.
Yeah,
and we kind of. I just want us to give them a bit of slack as well, and by the time you say, "Oh no, I can't do this," it's a the French system is very deep. The
That's
German
scary.
System, the German system is very deep.
Well, French by African is also be very sure. It's not like
even
French
worse,
French.
Even worse, even worse.
Antoine, please don't scare me.
No. It's not scary. I'm saying that
there's lots.
There's lots
different.
To learn,
yeah.
And it will probably make you happier.
Yeah,
if you just allow yourself to be learning.
Yeah. Which
I
really have.
I hope
I remember a lot of
this. Where is it from? How come we don't?
No, we're not definitely talking about this on camera. anyway, to those who have watched
now.
This episode of the film, thank you very much. Antoine, I will tell you everything you need to know off air. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for choosing a delicious cocktail. Guys, if you have any questions, please don't forget to send them. We can still have this conversation post. I will make sure Aunt Tomato gets them. And don't forget to get her book, Glorious Tomato Soda. Actually, the author is not going to say Aunt Tomato on the book. But thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, sweetie.
Season 3 Convos and Cocktails, produced by Lesego Tlhabi and WMG, and recorded at Vodcast TV Studios. Remember, this podcast is streamable on Spotify and other major streaming platforms.